welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, and I got three worms in the house tonight.
Ooh, worms in the house.
Yeah.
It's Lance and Lulu and our friend and neighbor, Amber Kleinman. Thanks for joining us, Amber.
Hey, happy to be here.
We're winding down the season, and we'd love to hear from folks tonight. 527-486-8866, KVNF now, worm at kvnf.org. I think we're going to get into a lot of storytelling tonight. We've had a good pre-show discussion here.
We've been in here laughing our tinies off, I'm telling you. You guys could be in trouble.
Uh-oh, yeah. Save us from ourselves.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's just start with the bean fall and some colder weather. And what's going on with, like, your soil being frozen or still...
No, it's nice.
It's nice.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, right. It's dried out right now enough that it's nice.
Uh-huh. And so what do you have left to do?
Turn soil.
That's it?
Last, the carrots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a lot of daikons out there, too. Yeah.
And so you're turning the soil for what reason at this point in the season?
I'm turning the soil, and then the freezing and thawing breaks it down.
Oh, it's just kind of a prep for next spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Good deal. And your garlic's in. Is everybody's garlic in?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That is.
And you can still plant.
Might as well. The soil's super soft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's moist. You don't have to water.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And what about cover crops? Good time to put your cover
crop
in
still
now?
You can still do rye.
Rye.
Or one of those kind of more hardy. It's only going to grow about an inch. You know,
but it'll be ready to go.
Yeah.
Next spring.
Mm-hmm.
Amber, do you do any cover crops in your beds?
Well, this year I decided to just heavily mulch. So I have got all my leaves raked up and put a layer of leaves down, and then I put a layer of rotten hay on top just to get it really
nice.
After all that moisture, I was like, I'm gonna grab it now. Seal that moisture in the ground and just cover it up so I don't have cover crops going. But I think I'll probably throw some out in the spring, because I feel at this point, you know, you could throw some out now, but you might as well wait till spring, right? Because you'll get better germination and more growth.
And you could do winter rye even in the springtime. You can do other things, but if you're going to do winter rye, make sure it's not where you're going to plant an early crop.
Right, because why bother?
Yeah, why bother?
Why bother?
And also, rye, when it's tilled in, inhibits the germination of small seeds.
That's right, I forgot about that.
So that's your lettuce, your spinach, your dill, you know, all those kind of things. So you don't want a cover crop of rye in that spot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, see, my soil is still, it's frozen. And it barely unfroze today. There's so much shade in my backyard now because the sun is so low in the sky. And the little tree that's behind the little house has been getting watered, and it's gotten bigger, and the big giant spruce is huge, and there's no sunlight back there.
Mm-hmm.
There just isn't. Sun's too low in the sky. The building, the little house back there is... Shades a huge, but shades the collard patch. Oh, I still have my collards in.
Good.
Oh, my God. And I've been eating them just raw, like just go out there and take. Yeah, I got them covered. Hopefully tomorrow or the next day I'll get them. I'll get them finished. But, man, are they good?
Yummy. And happy.
Get them.
It's been a good fall for
collards. Yeah, it
collards.
Has been. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're super happy. They look fabulous. And they're so sweet and tender. Right now, because from being frosted.
Right.
God, they're just fabulous.
Are you going to be freezing those?
Yeah, I'll freeze. I'll blanch and freeze the hearts, and I do that separate. You know, the little inside part, not the great big leaves, but the tight little inside.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those are so good. And then the leaves, I just whatever.
Just steam them and eat them.
Yeah, just steam them and eat them, right? But I'll process them. I'll same thing, blanch them and freeze them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be picking the kale until it's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Arugula, you could still go out in my yard and have arugula, or parsley is still looking good.
If you want sweet parsley, go pick it right now.
Go right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's nothing like it.
Are you covering your plants that are still out, Lance?
The daikons and carrots are covered, and yeah, I'm still covering the kale, keeping the real hard frost, and as soon as the sun comes up, it all comes off.
Yeah.
You know.
So probably.
See, I just don't even have any sun anymore. The sun ain't gonna shine anymore.
I think that's one thing for my next year that I'm really going to watch is just the sun pattern and the timing of that for planting new bushes and perennials.
Do you know that
placement of things?
So right now there's a full moon, almost full, with a ring around it.
Tomorrow,
serious ring around
it. It's a super moon tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, nice!
Yeah. I believe it's tomorrow.
Yeah, and the sky was the sunset tonight. Was the sky looked like it was bleeding? It was incredible.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can track the summer sun, the track of the summer sun by looking at the winter moon.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So like right now, for instance, the moon is very much towards the north. It's coming up very much towards the north because that's where the summer sun would come up. I mean, obviously east, but it's northeast. You know, it's gone summer sun way. So you can track where your sun's going by looking at the moon.
Oh, interesting. So I can get started on that right now.
Mm-hmm. And you can figure out where your summer sun's going to come up. And then you just look at, you know, when the winter solstice will be and track how many days back from it or going towards it you are, whatever. You know what I mean? You just you figure it out. Anyway, that's
or just wait till the sun.
Or you can just
look at shadows. You know, moon shadows too, but summer shadows are more
super moon. And what's the significance of that ring around the moon? Is that humidity?
I think it's
ice crystals.
Foreboding of rain.
I think it's the moisture in the atmosphere is frozen, and that's what it does.
So pretty.
So pretty.
Love it.
So pretty.
All right, 527-486-8866, KVNF now. Email us at worm@kvnf.org. All right, Amber, you were lucky enough to get in on the Zoom call that happened at the beginning of the month from the Colorado State University Extension Office about grasshoppers.
I did.
So
you know
that's your jam.
Bugs.
I signed up for that right away, and it was it was really interesting because it was four entomologists, several of which were specialists in grasshoppers. The first guy who spoke, and I have all their names written down, but anyway, he's from Wyoming, Wyoming, somehow related to CSU Extension, but he was a specialist with grasshoppers in Wyoming. And he spoke about how they treat in large, grazing operations. Because up in the north, I mean, we think we have it bad here right now, which we do. But if you look at the map, like they put out the map of where grasshoppers are the worst, north of us, the Dakotas are like red. Like we're kind of a green yellow, like it's bad, but not too bad. Eastern Colorado, the Dakotas, like they have it so bad that the grazing animals don't have grasses to eat.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my word.
And so this is what they're dealing with and how they do it on large acreages, trying to treat grasshoppers with aerial spraying from planes to try to keep the grasses alive so that the cows can eat something. So that was an interesting perspective because I didn't even consider like they were out, you know, affecting larger grazing areas as well, not just gardens.
And, and this is why I'm telling you we should have jihad on raccoons. No, I'm serious.
Wait, we're not talking about raccoons right now.
We'll get to raccoons.
No, but because I think the grasshoppers are so out of whack because who are their predators, right? It's the turkeys. It's the birds. Mm-hmm. You know, so your bird populations are dying off. And turkeys, there's a substantial amount of turkeys around here. But obviously those guys up in the Dakotas need more turkeys.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, what are they spraying aerial?
Yes, yeah, so that makes organic compound. Well, they're poisoning them with something.
Yeah. So they're, and I didn't go too deeply into this because we don't really talk about insecticides on this show. Like, we don't really want to encourage people to spray things like that. And so, and I don't feel like I have the knowledge to explain how to use them correctly either. So I kind of avoid the subject, but yeah, they're using malathion.
Yeah, you got to carbonyl, follow the, yeah.
Dimethyl benzoate.
The synthetic geranium stuff, what's it called?
Well, we'll get into that. But, yeah. But
not geranium, the other thing.
The biggest, the one that they're using that is the least damaging is a, it affects the chitin, the exoskeleton of the grasshoppers so that they can't molt into an adult. So anyway, what I wanted to talk about is understanding this creature because the way things are going, we are going to have them around. And so to try to understand their life cycle and things that benefit them is important. And so I was trying to kind of glean through. It was a two-hour Zoom call.
Wow.
And there was a lot of information. So I was trying to just comb through and figure out, like, what is applicable to our audience here, basically. And so there's a lot of conversations we could have. But what I wanted to focus on was the things that we can learn from it. For our people. So
perfect.
So basically there's 100 species of grasshoppers in Colorado, right? And so we are blessed with, not all of them are bad, and they all love to eat different things. So the interesting part is we, of course, have picked up the two-stripe grasshopper, which is one of the most devastating grasshoppers because they can increase from a normal number to a devastating crop destroying number in 1 year.
Wow.
And so they eat their body weight daily. And a single female can lay 450 eggs. And this is how they can grow to be in such large numbers so quickly.
Wow.
So, so that's how fast they can jump up. So the threshold
is that lay eggs once per season, or
this is a female will lay multiple pods of eggs that carry like 100 eggs, but she can, you know, the maximum amount that she would be able to lay is 450 eggs. Not all of those will successfully become adult grasshoppers, but they give it a shot.
Yeah.
Wow.
A devastating number would be a 60 grasshoppers per, or 30 grasshoppers per square yard. That is like, that's 400... or 200 pounds of plant material daily per acre that they can eat. So anyway,
you might as well get an elephant or something.
Right.
Go big or go home, you know?
So what we should know about the two-stripe grasshopper is that it's an early hatching species, and it lays eggs, or it hatches out for 4 to 6 weeks, depending on the temperature of the soil. So this is basically April till June is the major hatching portion of its life, okay? And this is important to know because it goes through five nymphal instars, which is it grows. It basically has five stages of growth before it molts into an adult grasshopper. And so in the first three instars, when it's tiny, the consensus is that is the only part of the year where you can effectively spray or treat for this species. Anything after the fourth or fifth instar, or when they molt and become an adult, any kind of treatment is ineffective, or you get diminishing returns where the amount of energy and money that you put into spraying is not worth it, because they're not susceptible to insecticides after this point. So we're saying that April to June, you're hatching eggs. Every 5 to 7 days, they change into the next instar. Wow. They become an adult within 40 days. And after 40 days, they're kind of unstoppable.
Wow.
And all four entomologists all agreed on this point.
Wow.
So their vulnerability is early on, when they're little. Tiny. After that, the sprays that you put out aren't affecting them, and they are affecting other insects. So think about that. If you have a bunch of adults that are flying around, this is not your method anymore. Spraying your way out of this is not going to do you any good.
Mm-hmm. Organic or non-organic.
It doesn't matter. Right. Yeah. Even, you know, that's debatable. But from what we are talking about in terms of treating them organically, your methods are become fewer and fewer.
Wow.
So something to know about them.
450 eggs from one grasshopper.
Yeah, that's
I'm gonna
not
tell you, I got a lot of eggs
that's
out there right now.
Right?
Yeah, I think you've got to get a strategy here.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So strategy. What are the favorable conditions for grasshoppers? Mild falls. Mild falls allow the eggs to grow to a point where they can survive the winter. If we get a really hard freeze in the fall, it will kill a lot of those eggs. And so they can't harden themselves to survive the winter. So that would cut down numbers if we had a really sharp freeze in the fall.
Okay, well, you didn't get that.
We didn't get
so
that.
Check that
okay.
one off. You don't, that didn't work.
Wet springs also benefit them because there's lush foliage. And when they emerge, there's so much to eat.
Right.
So they, you know, delicious. We think that they don't like rain, but lush springs give them all the plant matter they need. And so they come out and they just start eating.
Right. And that's what we had this spring.
That's what we had this
that
spring.
Wet
yeah.
spring.
Yep.
Sure did.
So having foliage spring to fall is just providing them all the food they could possibly want. So that's what we had this year. Historically, most infestations of grasshoppers are ended by a severe drought, which is also terrible. But that's what has historically ended the infestations of the past.
Wow.
Our other conundrum was...
We're screwed.
With don't say that.
You're
we have to keep up
do.
Hope in
damned
all ways. Our other conundrum is how the bees and the grasshoppers share nesting areas. So, you know, I talked about, we should till because that'll kill the grasshoppers. Well, that also kills all of the cavity nesting bees, which is all of our native pollinators.
Right.
So, yeah, you could flood irrigate or you could till to try to kill off grasshoppers, but then you're killing all your native bees off. So this is a conundrum to think about when you're treating with insecticides, when you're tilling. Like, it is affecting these insects as well, who are, you know, your helpers out there. So really consider when you're, you know, that you have these pollinators in the same places. They nest in and they prefer south-facing ditch banks. They prefer, you know, exposed soil. And so they're in the same areas as these grasshopper eggs. So that is a consideration. And when the grasshoppers come out and eat so much so quick, they take away all the early forage for the bees that are coming out looking for the flowers that aren't blooming because the grasshoppers ate them when they were small. So that's part of the story as well.
It's, it's called the food chain. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so what can we do? One thing I thought was interesting that one of them brought up is that grasshoppers have several favorite crops, and I'm going to list those because what they talked about was planting these separately because they could be trap plants for the grasshoppers. But these are very common plants that we all grow. So their favorite plants are lettuce, zinnias, leeks, and onions, carrots, corn, and beans. So one suggestion was to take these plants and plant them in a more protected area or use these plants as a trap area for to attract your grasshoppers and then treat them in that area that kind of draws them away from the rest of your garden. Just a thought.
Is that what happened to your zinnias this year?
Oh, mine.
No.
No, it's mine.
Yours. Oh, really?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just,
as soon as I planted, they were gone the next day. Oh, like they ate them so fast.
No, I didn't have those kind of problems.
Yeah. Other suggestion, chicken moat surrounding the garden. I've seen this around town. People taking a run of fencing and making a loop around their garden where the chickens can run but don't get into the garden, but encircle your planting area so that as the grasshoppers make their way towards your plants, the chickens get them first. Heavy insect netting, which was my application this year. They will eat through fine netting. So having a thicker netting might be better. If you're going to buy netting, get something that's hardy. And their instinct is to climb to the top of the plant in the evenings.
Yeah.
And so they get the first rays of sun to warm them up, and then they dive down into the ground in the morning after the sun comes up. So if you're going to go out trying to pop heads off, like that's what I do, go out in the evening when they're on the tops of the plants, they're easy to see, easy to grab, and you can hand pick to your heart's delight in the moonlight. And so no matter what you do, we're saying use the least toxic, least persistent option. So if you were to go to, you know, the thing that's offered around here is the Eco Brand, which we know is 7, which is it's an insecticide. It's not a good thing. But if that's your only option and you're getting devastated, the least toxic, least persistent option would be to use the granular form early in the season outside of the area that you're planting in. Of course, we're not recommending you use insecticides, but just so you know, like that's what is offered in our community. So we should talk about how to use that without affecting. And this is applied not as a dust, as a granular, only in April, May, June, not after that, not during rain, not in, you know, windy conditions. So there's that. Neem pyrethrins can be a deterrent.
Pyrethrins.
Yeah. Early in the season.
Yeah.
Go for it with these. It is a repellent. It's a deterrent. It can affect them slightly in those first couple weeks of life. But beyond that,
nada.
Don't bother. You're hurting other insects by spraying this stuff, and you're not hurting grasshoppers any longer. The other thing that was interesting is they did a study using garlic and pepper sprays, and it did not deter them. In fact, the grasshoppers ate more.
They loved it.
They enjoyed the garlic and the pepper sprays. So they're like, those don't work, so don't even bother with this.
Did they say anything about clove oil?
They did not talk about clove oil.
Yeah, I just know Jared's really interested in that as deterrent.
Right, yeah. So there's a lot of things they haven't tried. I mean, they are CSU Extension Office people. So they they're testing, you know, insecticides and mm-hmm. the known organics that we have. This leaves a whole lot of room for experimentation, which mm-hmm. is obviously what we need to do. So yeah, all of the essential oil sprays that could be a deterrent, let's try it. Let's talk about it and yeah. let's call into the show and let us know what you're trying and see what helps.
Yeah.
See, holy and okay, show. So here's, so if we had herds of turkeys.
We do have herds mm-hmm. of turkeys. Flocks. Not in town, flocks. But. Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, yeah, flocks.
You can't so really herd turkeys, can you?
No. Yeah. Well.
Not wild ones.
No.
Not so much. But if you had flocks of turkeys, you see, then you wouldn't have as much of a grasshopper problem.
That's true.
If they were everywhere. And so this is why I feel like, you know, you need to eliminate some of the raccoons that are around because they eat turkey eggs. They eat every egg they can get their hands. They're a pain in the neck, you know, so.
Well, also like guinea hens and ducks and it's fowl.
All about the birds. Yeah. I mean, they talked about blister beetles right. being also something that attacks grasshoppers. We don't have enough things that eat these.
Yeah.
But maybe if we have so many of them, it will bring more birds here because we have so many grasshoppers. I don't know, but
yeah, that could definitely. I mean, that's definitely the way it's supposed to work.
It's supposed
right.
to work,
right? You know, you get a flush in one population, and another population comes and takes mm-hmm. advantage of mm-hmm. it, and then usually they overpopulate, and then they die off a bit, and it's a back and forth kind of thing.
Yeah,
always in nature.
Wow. So I think establishing some sort of perimeter
mm-hmm.
area in your garden is probably pretty important, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're going to have birds out there or you're going to use some kind of application of some sort of substance.
Right.
Because you want to be considerate of those bees. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a big problem.
It's a conundrum.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, it's a big problem for sure.
That's great information. Trying to understand the grasshopper.
Trying to understand.
Yeah.
We got the whole winter to think about it.
We do. We need ideas. So be thinking out there, folks.
Oh, I have a little story to share since we're getting into stories tonight.
Oh, we love stories,
1979, green Maverick, no air conditioning, driving to Chicago with my girlfriend, windows down, going through Idaho. Or not Idaho, Iowa. Cornfields everywhere. Jamming on the radio, and all of a sudden, 8-track tape player.
Oh, God.
And all of a sudden, this giant grasshopper flies into the car, hits the dome light, and just splatters. We had grasshopper on our lips. There's grasshopper all over the car. So when we're talking about this, I just keep getting flashbacks. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break with that, and we'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to As the Worm Turns on KVNF. I'm Jill Spears, your host, here with Lance Lulu and Amber Kleinman tonight. Thanks for the grasshopper report, Amber.
Sure.
It's good to know there's experts that are working on this, too.
Yeah, and really festering this out.
Yeah. People are trying to learn where their weaknesses are to help us out, but there's just no silver bullet, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, I'm sure we'll have that on our agenda as we get into the spring. And I'm looking at April through June is the hatching period.
That's the time.
April through June, uh-huh. right? And so I wonder if you have a lot of... Okay, so we know they lay their eggs mostly in open dirt. They don't burrow into deep grass and stuff like that.
Actually, they do. Was my thought, is that it was in the dirt. But they also said that they put their eggs in the crowns of bunch grass and in the roots of weeds. So it's not all exposed dirt like I had thought mm-hmm. previously as
right.
well. So yeah, they're kind of everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. So, okay, but it's still I wanted to wonder if, you know, there's a lot of bare dirt in the house, in my yard next door. So what if I just put a big tarp down and baked them out.
Hmm. It's the same thing, though. You're affecting ground nesting bees too. So, yeah, it's a hard one.
Yeah, and what about grasses growing or over the winter so that bugs can overwinter? Is that an important thing?
Yeah, well, yeah, and we've talked about this before too. How leaving things sit instead of chopping everything down and making nicely mowed and flat. Mm-hmm. Like, it is important to leave leaf debris and leave standing wild areas, because pollinators will be there. Not just pollinators, but all insects overwinter in leaf debris and in these kind of left alone areas. So you're protecting good species, you're protecting bad species. It's tricky.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, it is, but it's just balance. It's just like, yeah, it's a question of balance, you know. And so you
My hedge grove is great.
You have to figure out how to fit into it.
Because I don't go in there. All that leaf mow for the past 20 years, you know, and grasses, I don't cut anything down in there.
Right. It's just a barrier. It's basically a barrier wall of thickly grown, 15 foot high, 8 foot deep trees and shrubs, right?
Yeah.
It keeps out the deer, and it leaves protected spaces for birds, I would assume, too, in there.
Yeah, the birds really like it.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
Those little sparrow birds love it. I have that quince row, the hill strip on the Rio Grande side, and plus the elm tree, and they just, they love that.
Yeah, the only thing I do with it is I actually thin the choke cherries out every year. And I get lots of stakes and stuff for trellises and bean poles and things like that.
Right.
So could that be a perimeter of some sort to help with the grasshopper situation, having a hedge grove around your...
Yeah, I mean, it would be a barrier for them to have to move through, but it also it makes an area where birds are going to be living and attracted to.
Right.
So they're going to be there patrolling the hedgerow, eating those grasshoppers. If you can create a hedgerow,
for 4 or 5 years, I had the magpies nesting.
And
let's see, who was it? I think the ravens were nesting somewhere close because they were in the yard all the time this spring. They were feeding babies. Yeah. I should say ravens. They're probably crows.
Yeah.
Crows.
Probably both.
Yeah.
They're cousins.
But I bet they eat. They eat grasshoppers.
Mm-hmm. I bet you they do.
They're all good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
That'd be a great photo of a big crow or a raven with a grasshopper in its mouth, like a close-up.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to go for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's why I like to just leave the leaves, or mulch with leaves, and just leave the leaves everywhere as well.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know. It's a toss up, and then sometimes I mow them into the grass, and sometimes I don't. We'll see what happens.
Right.
Yeah, we see what we'll get to by the time it really freezes.
That's exactly it.
Well, you're doing a good job of winding down, Lance. It must have been a flurry of activity this week to make that progress.
Yeah, I'm definitely telling everybody I work for, this is the last time for this year.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm done.
And you got your beets out as well.
And the beets went to uproot, all the beets.
Nice.
And what else is out there? And I said I have daikons and carrots. And the only place it's not cleaned up, and I'll get it, is the patch with zinnias. You know, just haven't got there.
Right.
Now, this is a thought. You know, thinking of not cleaning something out, the birds really like the zinnia seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so if you've left those flowers and they're still there, the birds will work those flower heads.
They like a lot of the cosmos.
They like cosmos, marigolds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like those seeds.
Calendula, they're in there.
Oh, how
those
about
wild sunflowers?
Yeah. Mexican hat.
Yep.
Mexican hat they like too.
Echinacea, I have some huge echinaceas.
They like this.
Yep.
And they love those.
Leave that stand if you have it. It is. You know, some people don't think it's an eyesore, but imagine how the birds see it, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah, they don't care. And no, but, you know, who cares? I mean, you know.
The reason why that hasn't been cleaned up, because I can't see it. It's, in a, it's not in my view.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, yeah. It's, yeah. I see it when I'm walking around. I say, oh, yeah, but
yeah,
it's fine.
Any minute now.
But it serves a purpose.
Yeah.
So you don't need to, quote, clean it up. No. You know?
Right. Yeah, but then there's times. But then there's times where, for instance, with that silly plum tree of mine, that's done. You know, it's official. It dropped all of its plums on the ground. Most of its plums, and the ones even when they were dropping and they should have been perfect, they weren't. They tasted terrible. So bottom line is that tree and all of its suckers, I'm gonna yank out. That's gonna cause a huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Disturbance in the forest over there.
I had three stumps that I have to dig up.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, three. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe four.
Yeah, if I really thought about it, I would
and
do
the reason
stump
why
too.
They've kept on dying is from that cold that we had in October 2.5-3 years ago.
Right.
They've just been dying back and dying back, and now it's like, oh, okay, you're out of here.
You're out of here. You got to go.
And see, ironically, that probably helped us with our grasshopper problem.
That did.
Yeah. Like that probably took out a whole ton of grasshoppers that would have been here otherwise.
You know what? That was 2020, wasn't it? That
yeah, I think
fall
so.
Of 2020.
Right around there.
Yeah, it was right around there when it went from like weather we were having a couple of weeks ago to 4 degrees above zero. Four fingers like that. Unbelievable.
Dropped to like 80 degrees in one day.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
That
yeah,
that,
temperature
that
swing,
worked
huh?
everything. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's, you know, and it's just, it's going to be interesting. The next, from here on out.
From here on out.
But also looking at, look, that was terrible. It killed a bunch of trees, but it could have devastated grasshoppers. You know, an extreme weather event like a drought, it's terrible.
But.
The way it benefits us in other ways, we don't even see, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So it's a thought.
Yeah,
it's
the only thing constant is change.
Yeah. And you just have to roll with it.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. You have to roll with it. And I think there's something about being a human and being able to roll with change that is really healthy for your
being. Well, that's how we got this far.
Yeah.
It's because we're really
we're
super
calling on
adaptable.
Us now to roll with change for sure.
Well, you know, there it is. That's the truth. And that goes back to what I always say, the biodiversity. So if there were more smaller operations, there would be more biodiversity. And then you're just increasing your chances of having the balance not necessarily come back, but where one person fails, another person succeeds, you know, for whatever reason, you know, and that's what you need. You need that biodiversity and smaller operations, I think, like Lance has and Amber.
Small farms. And we've got that here in the North Fork, and it's a blessing. It's
a
beautiful.
Blessing and a half. Yeah, it's amazing. So hold your positions, everybody.
Yep.
Hold your line.
527-486-8866, KVNF now. The Delicata pumpkin squash.
Right.
Okay, here's a story.
All right, here's the story.
What happened?
Okay, so I took it home, right? It's over there in the roasting pan, and the forks are there, and I just steamed them up, baked them up with some... butter and brown and maple syrup. But here's what I found. Okay, so there I was with this creature that I didn't know what I was going to do at all. Here's this big old...
What is it?
Yeah.
What's it
going
to be?
So here's the first thing I noticed, okay? The stem was really stuck, and it was very dry. Now, this Lance harvested this, so it's been done exactly right. And the stem was in there really hard, and it was also really difficult, you know, like a pumpkin, you can get into it, right? It's usually the skin isn't that tough. This was tough. I had my big knife out, and I was scared because, you know, I didn't want to be making any mistakes. And so to me, what that says to me with that stiff, strong stem connection and the outer skin being so tough, this could be a real keeper.
Mm-hmm.
One of those.
Mm-hmm. I got four or five still at the house. So yeah, I should just set them aside.
Just, mm-hmm. I think you're going to be fine. You know, you mm-hmm. could probably eat them next spring. The flesh inside was, I gave Lance his half. It's thick like a pumpkin, and it was very firm. So it wasn't, you know, like a delicata. Mm-hmm. It was firm. The other thing that was really cool was the pulp on the inside was super stringy. You know when you get a pumpkin and you get all that gloppy mass mm-hmm. inside and it's difficult to deal with? Well, this wasn't like that. The pulp was just stringy, and it was really, really easy to separate the seeds out. Whereas when you have a pumpkin, sometimes you just can't believe you're going through what you're going through to get the seeds out, you know. So anyway, that was really interesting. And once you got the seeds out, they were really, started working it. It was really easy to separate the seeds out. So this cross, really, I'm going to plant some of those mm-hmm. seeds and see what happens.
See what happens next year. Okay.
Yeah, I got a bag for everybody, and so we can all have some seeds.
Stems like that that are stuck on there, I hit them with a hammer.
Yeah. I hit mine with the hammer.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I went right into the little drawer where I keep my kitchen tools and got my hammer out and whacked it, and that worked. Yeah, there was no way it coming out by itself. So.
And it smells delicious. How did you bake it?
I just did the usual 350. Mm-hmm. Put some butter in the bottoms. There, it was real like a bowl, real concave. I cut it in half and then I quartered the half, and I just baked it. I put a little water in the bottom of the pan, and it wasn't a covered pan. They're in a covered pan now, but I didn't bake them covered. I baked them uncovered. Mm-hmm. And I just put a little butter and a little maple syrup and let it go to town. Yeah.
So since this was kind of a random pollination, then the seeds are probably going to make other random, like this isn't going to be true to type.
No, it won't be. But no. Because you didn't, when it was flowering, I'm sure Lance wasn't worried about who was pollinating them.
Well, it's a pepo. So the zucchini was right there.
Yeah.
And the other delicatas were right there.
So
it could be a zucchini pumpkin next time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, gotcha. I've had right. Those are not good.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah, that is not a good cross.
No, but they'll find out.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we'll find out.
That'll be fun.
Put it in and see what happens. There could be some that come true to form.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Never know.
Unless when you're a real seed person and you want all your pumpkins to be the same, you know, sugar pumpkins, pie pumpkins, you know, whatever, or squash, whatever it is, you as soon as they their flower opens, you either pollinate with another flower of that mm-hmm. exact kind, and then you tie it shut, or you put a bag over the end of the tiny, tiny new fruit to keep it from getting pollinated by, you know, some random rascal who mm-hmm. works in there. Yeah.
Well, that's how it came from.
Sure.
Whenever I grew it out for seed 10 years ago, that one got somebody else's gene in there.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've been growing the delicata, same jar of seeds for years, but this year it did that. One plant.
Just one plant.
One plant. Okay. Made 11 of those kind of squash.
Wow.
Wow.
It was quite productive.
So when you're talking about you've had your delicata seeds forever, do you do that where you fasten off the end?
No, I'm so isolated, I don't need to
you
do that.
You don't worry about it?
No.
Yeah, we couldn't pull it off in town.
No. Mm-hmm. If you were in town, you'd have to. What they do, the evening before you got your squash batch, and you look at all the male flowers and all the female flowers that are going to open in the morning. Those you tape shut so that when you get out there, they haven't been pollinated yet. And then you take all the male flowers and you work the female flowers, and then you tape back up the female flowers because that's what's going to have the fruit.
Mm-hmm. And you make stuffed squash blossoms for dinner.
Right? Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because, yeah, they're really good.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's a lot of work. And, yeah. And you got to get it just right because if you don't, you're going to get a mix.
And in my mind goes to, okay, this is a huge plant. Would I risk growing a massive squash plant with questionable returns? That's where my head goes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like space. It's fun to experiment and be like, oh, it'll feel interesting to see what this happens. But then you have a, you know, you got 10 square feet taken up by a squash plant that you're not sure
you're
want to eat.
You're not sure it's going to be good.
And then you're like, why did I do this?
Well, and you know what? And the seed companies, you know, in recent years, I've not been terribly satisfied with the seed companies either about how pure their strains were. I had, you know, yellow squash that was not what it should have been. And I've got a box of squash sitting in the kitchen that I'm going to do something with, but I got to figure it out by opening them and seeing what they taste like and look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I want to grow one of my squashes out, that's all I'm growing for the season.
You're growing one type.
Yeah, I'm growing one Maxima or one Machata or one Pepo.
Totally. Yeah.
I can grow all three of them together.
Right.
But I can only grow one of them.
One of each.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you got to set aside. And it, you know.
When you want to be sure to get the pure seed.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saving seed.
Mm-hmm.
If you're saving seed.
Yeah.
Oh, well. It is interesting.
It's a fun experiment.
Yeah. It's just one experiment after the other.
That's for sure.
Yep.
You know,
that's true.
Hey, our listener Terry called and offered this advice for grasshoppers. He broadcasts bird seed out there, and so he gets good results for brings the birds in for grasshoppers.
I have heard of this. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's clever. Interesting. Yeah, that is clever.
You could just put bird feeders out too. You wouldn't have to broadcast it because not all. Bird, not all feed would be safe to throw in the ground because now you have weeds.
Yeah.
So maybe just put bird feeders.
The little millet seeds and thistle seeds are favorites of birds.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that's probably good. Bring the birds in and...
You could bring the birds in,
Let them perch up there and zero in on those little boogers down there.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Terry. Appreciate
that. Yeah, that's awesome. Or just manage your weeds, you know, but...
No need
These
to bring more
have
weeds.
Right.
No,
yeah,
you guys have it.
Yeah, right. I don't mind because my gardens are so small, it's easy. But if you have a bigger spot, forget about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a pain in the butt. But, and the water thing too. Make sure you always have good water for your birds in your yard.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, for them to bathe in and for them to drink. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll come in to hit it for a drink and... Maybe they see a grasshopper and think, oh, baby.
Right. Food and water for birds.
Yeah. I like it.
You just got to keep it rolling somehow.
Yeah. Lance, you have your raspberries cut down. And those are which variety? Can you remember?
Those are the Prima Canes. And so now I will finally get to putting the compost on. I mentioned last week the half that compost pile on the asparagus, another half on the raspberries.
Yeah.
And they're ready for next year.
I like the Prima Cane concept of just being able to not worry about how you're pruning, just cut that baby back.
take it down.
Yeah.
I have the people that I work for that have the floor canes, I think that's what they're called. Mm-hmm. And I really encourage some. I says, it's best to cut those old canes out when they're done or in the fall, because those canes are green. Now, I'm going to have to go into some of these in the spring, and they're dried out. It's twice as hard to cut them.
God, yeah, they're like iron.
You know, so it's better to have cut them down right if they've done.
And don't they maybe sometimes have borers in them, too?
Yes, they can have the cane borer.
Cane borer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
so
best to
get those out and burn them, right?
Yeah.
Or throw them away. Like, don't keep them around.
I actually put mine in the compost. and I haven't had any problems.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, but you shredded them up before you put them in.
I had done that, but not for the 2 years now because the shredder broke.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no.
So, anyways, and it worked just fine. They, where the real problem, there's some borers. I didn't have any this year, but early on when I spray with spinosad. And spinosad will take care of cane borers.
Yep, it does.
And stuff. So I didn't have any of that. But the real problem is when, if we live in a more humid climate, we would have those leaf diseases, the fungus and mildews and stuff like that that they get. Mm-hmm. And that's where the real problem about why you should burn them. So if you have a leaf disease on your raspberries or any plants, don't put them on the compost.
No.
Get rid of them.
Yeah.
True.
You know, put them in your burn pile.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody's waiting to the last minute to call.
As usual.
As usual. 527-486-8866, KVNF now. Amber, when you were here a few weeks ago, or maybe it was when you called in, you had found a monarch larvae.
Oh, this is a good story.
It is. Tell us the story, please, Amber.
Oh, gosh.
So there you are.
I don't condone this behavior, but I had seen this monarch larvae. It was pretty large, beautiful caterpillar on some milkweed, and it was going to freeze later that week. And so I pondered it for a couple of days, and I was like, oh, gosh darn it, I'm going to have to bring this thing in and try to keep it alive. Nice. Because who knows, you know, there's no big loss. It would have died anyway. So I did. I brought it in with some leaves from the milkweed it was on, and it was a small plant, a thin leaf milkweed that I didn't know what type it was. And so I tried to cover up that patch and keep that green and wash off the aphids that were on that plant and keep feeding it leaf by leaf the leaves that I could get off of this milkweed. And I kept it alive in the sink in the bathroom for a week and a half, and meanwhile warming and covering milkweeds outside, which I would never normally do, but I was like, I gotta
nurture you,
you know, protect the food for this single monarch. And so I ran out of leaves from this one type of milkweed, and I had been keeping warm another patch of the native milkweed, which is a larger leaf. And so I took a cutting from this other milkweed and I gave it to the larvae, and about 2 days later it was dead. And so I reached out to the monarch pavilion, or the butterfly pavilion in Denver, and got to talk to their butterfly specialist. And what she told me when I relayed my story was that they are very specific to one type of milkweed. And when I ran out of that milkweed and I tried to move it to the other milkweed, it didn't jive with this larvae. And that's probably what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know how long it would stay alive. I was kind of hoping it would go into chrysalis form, and then they actually would have taken this monarch. If I could have gotten it to the butterfly pavilion in Denver, they could have taken it off my hands.
Wow.
Yeah. So interesting to know that they do have monarchs there. And so she said, well, if this happens again, I can drive this monarch to Denver.
Put it in the truck, the seatbelt on, and take him to Denver.
Take it to the monarch. Well, Butterfly Pavilion.
That narrow leaf milkweed that it was on, World?
Yeah, World is.
And I don't know. I planted it this year, and I can't remember what type it was because I just kind of put it out everywhere.
And the other one that's narrow leafed is that tuberosa one, the one that's native that gets the orange flowers.
Right.
On it.
I mean, yeah. I planted like three different kinds of milkweed, thinking I need to diversify because I have a lot of the native, So I had at least three other kinds of milkweed that I put out, and I don't know which type it was.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right. And so the when you're saying the native, you mean the one with the bigger leaf with the big pink?
Yeah,
pink,
that's everywhere. Big pink ball.
And it lives
in Carnada, right?
Yeah. And it lives
Showy milkweed.
That's it. It's called showy milkweed.
Yeah, and it's everybody's got a little of it. But that's what I moved it to. Mm-hmm. You don't have it? Oh, interesting.
No, you can get rid of it. But it's not good in a pasture that you're raising, animals or gonna hay. You don't want it in there, but it's pretty successful everywhere else.
But it was happy on non-native milkweed.
It was happy on this milkweed, and also I think this is true. I don't know. I saw it on YouTube, so it may not be true. But when I was running out of food for this thing, I saw that somebody has actually cut butternut squash in rings and that they will eat it. And she said that it brought these monarchs to their chrysalis form eating butternut squash, but the person at the Butterfly Pavilion, she didn't think that was
okay.
Anyway,
interesting.
It's not all true. Not all true out there.
You gotta.
I was desperate. It was getting to the end of my milkweed. So,
well, one thing that is true on YouTube is Stefano's drone footage and interviews of Lance that he's done all summer long in your garden. And he's busy editing that, and it's going to be up on YouTube.
Yeah, I'll talk to Stefano and see how you can view it. It's proxy. When we talked last, about 2 hours worth of video of the garden.
Oh,
and
great.
The last one is me putting the storage trench together.
Oh, great. So a whole season of
wow, that's awesome.
Transformation.
Lance is going viral.
Oh, cool.
Super fun. Look forward to that. And we'll share that link when that happens. And that's going to do it for us tonight. Amber, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to do it.
See you next season, probably.
Probably.
Yeah, because we've got a couple more shows left. Yep. And we'll be back next Wednesday for one of those shows. And so thanks for listening to As the Worm Turn. It's Global Express coming up next.
Good night, everybody.
Have a good evening.
Be kind.
As I yawn.
I know. You got a couple of tired gardeners here, let me tell you. We're ready. I got a girl that I love so.